Go for it. I don't know if I can speak sitting down, but I'll give it a try. Hi, everyone. I am Laura, and I am a food addict.
Hi, Laura.
And I certainly qualify to be here. I just need to take a second to look at my fat pictures. So I've been coming to OA. In April, it was 24 years. And in next month, July 20th, you know, God willing, I'll have 24 years of back-to-back abstinence. I did not get here because of any virtue of my own. I got here because of a lot of pain. Like many of us, I come from a family rife with alcoholism, food addiction, trauma, you know, you name it. I always thought it's what made us really interesting and fun, and to a degree that was true. And then but what happened is the coping mechanisms that I learned as a little kiddo, you know, they worked for a while. It was all I knew how to do, you know, to isolate myself, to shut myself down, to not let anybody know I was having any feelings. And, you know, I stuffed a lot of that down with food, most of it with food, especially as a young child. That was really all I could get my hands on. But eventually into adulthood, those coping mechanisms turned against me and no longer worked, even though I kept using them because I really didn't know what else to do. So I came here, so I'm 64. I came here when I was 40. I had just turned 40. That was one of the things that helped me hit bottom, was I was 40. My third divorce had just been finalized. I was getting closer to eating the way that I really wanted to, you know, not being able to have as much restraint and control over it. I was on probation at work. I was verbally abusive and rough with my kids. After my most recent previous husband and I had split up, I had waited, I didn't know about the program 90 days, but I had waited 90 days to start dating. It's probably the longest I had gone without dating in my adult life. And, you know, that relationship failed. And, you know, thank you, God, because it was, again, one of the things that my higher power greased the skids. Like, I had to have a lot of things that I was in pain about in order for me to be willing to ask for help and say, what I am doing is no longer working. I would see other people that seemed like what I would call, quote, normal. They could pay cash for things. They were able to control their weight. You know, again, my behavior with my kids was out of control. My life was just a wreck. You know, I couldn't pay my bills on time, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I'd say, and those were the high points. So anyway, I had friends that did a mini intervention on me, and, you know, after one close friend had said, you know, I really can't spend time with you anymore. Your life is too chaotic. Your kids are out of control. You know, I'm done with this. And then, you know, I thought, what a jerk. And then after that, when a couple of other friends did the same thing, then it kind of hit me. Like, I started to take notice, like, maybe there's something to this. And I'm an equal opportunity addict. You know, it's, you know, if I was really sickened by the food, sometimes I might be able to put the food down very briefly and focus on crazy relationships or alcohol or shopping or whatever. You know, I just would rotate through them. But I am I'm a yo-yoer when it comes to food and to weight, and my you know, I'm pretty petite, and or so people tell me, and my top weight was 173 pounds, non-pregnant weight. When I was pregnant both times, I got up to about 176, and I weigh 120 now. So I yo-yoed a lot, and what happened was, again, the brief glimpses that I thought I had of controlling the food were shorter, you know, were fewer and farther between, and the peaks of the yo-yo would get higher, and the floor would get, I'm sorry, the peaks would get higher, the floors would get higher, and I just kept you know, eventually I just couldn't stop eating and I couldn't lose weight at all. I got into a very, you know, common, you know, commercial diet program, which is a great, well-rounded program if you're not a food addict like me. You know, I've known from a young age that I'm addicted to sugar, to refined carbohydrates. My mother would, you know, remove parts of pieces of food and say, oh, that's just too sweet for me. And I just couldn't stop staring at it. Like, there was no such thing as too sweet. Didn't matter how sick it made me feel after I ate it. And on Thanksgiving, I'm sorry to be like gender stereotypical here, but in my family anyway, all the women were doing all the work, and afterwards all the men would go crash on the couch and watch sports, and I had always eaten so much that I was crashing on the couch and eating sports with everybody else, not helping with anything because I was in a food coma and couldn't function until I slept it off. So what this did was it separated me. I learned at this early age that what I internalized with that, there was something wrong with me because I wanted more food, because I wanted the sweet food, that I wanted to eat too much. And so I learned to lie about it and to be sneaky about it and not let people really see me eat everything that I was eating. That rippled out into other areas of my life where I learned to be very dishonest about who I am as a person and how I felt about things, that I had feelings about things. And fast forward through, you know, crazy college years, young adult years, relationships up and down and all over the place. And so when I was 40, my friends said, you know, you need to do something. And they suggested I go to this counselor, you know, who by the grace of God had been sober for about 20 years at that point. And he had me read the Big Book and wanted me to go to AA because I am an alcoholic as well. And I read the Big Book in about 2 days and I said, you know, and I wasn't drinking at that point. I was a dry drunk. But I said, if you put food everywhere where it says alcohol, that's me. And he said, well, then you need to go to OA. So again, you know, my higher power had the path ready for me. He and his wife had a good friend who had been in OA and had success losing weight. He was giving a spiritual workshop, and he invited me to go, and she was there. And she met me at the first meeting, and I lived in New Hampshire for a long time, and the first meeting I went to was at the Elliott Hospital in Manchester, in, of course, the cafeteria. And so when I get there, I can't find the meeting, and I'm roaming around. And I went up to the front desk, you know, in the lobby, and I said to the woman, you know, just in the stage door whisper, you know, do you know where the Overeaters Anonymous meeting is? And she gets on the loudspeaker. You know, where's the Overeaters Anonymous meeting? So, you know, again, by the grace of God, I'm just, you know, bursting out of my clothes, sweating profusely. My face is bright red, but I found the meeting and I stayed. And one of the things, I don't know if you guys do this here, but I saw somebody, I hadn't seen people do it in years, and I'm a visual person, and my real last pair of jeans I had got lost when we moved about 10 years ago. So a couple of years ago, I went out and I found, you know, a similar pair and kind of a similar style, but this is what I was wearing, you know, when I came in 24 years ago. So I am not wearing these today, thank you God. And another thing that helped me hit bottom was I was in Filene's up in Manchester, and my size 16 jeans, those were no longer fitting me. And I was in the regular Mrs. section looking for the size 18, and there weren't any. And I asked the woman, and she said, no, those are in the women's section. And that was just one of the vanity things that helped me get here. So anyway, I go to the first meeting. I was really desperate and ready to get a sponsor, and someone said to me, don't get a sponsor here tonight. Let me take you to this other meeting tomorrow night. So she took me to this meeting the next night. And And there was this short, you know, there was this petite, slim little woman of Italian descent like me. And she had been abstinent for 5 years, and she was smiling, and she hadn't eaten a lot of the foods that I was living on for 5 years. And I thought, oh my gosh, like whatever, you know, Kool-Aid she's drinking, I want some. So the amazing thing was, I was such an isolator. I was a single mom. I isolated a lot. And I walked out of that meeting with this, you know, cloud of love and warmth around me. I don't know, 5 or 6 other women just welcomed me, gave me their phone numbers. I actually was desperate enough to call a couple of them. I got a sponsor that night. She's still my sponsor today, 24 years later, amazingly. Because with me in relationships, like, it was my way or the highway. If we had a misunderstanding, I was gone. And I might, you know, call you 6 months or a year later and pretend nothing happened, but it's been a real lesson for me to have a relationship with someone for 24 years, besides my kids who are, like, stuck with me. So, so I got a sponsor, and, you know, and I share what works for me. I know everybody's, you know, I'm much more open-minded to people do whatever works for them. You know, she was very prescriptive. She gave me a food plan to follow, and I looked at it, and I said, I can't possibly, you know, do this for the rest of my life. And she said, you're not going to do it for the rest of your life. You're just going to do it for today. And I still think about that. So I got on the food plan, and I thought that was it. And my life was really, really out of control. I think my daughter was 12 and my son was 10 when I got abstinent. And like I was saying, I was a single mom, and I was just, my behavior was awful with my kids. I do remember now, and people have helped point out that there were a lot of good things that I did with my kids as well, so I can tend to focus on the defects. But I would pick my daughter up from softball practice like around 6 o'clock and go home. You know, I need to go to the store because I didn't have the food I needed. And, you know, I slowly but surely learned from coming to meetings and people saying, you know, my sponsor said, and I just couldn't believe she said this, she said, buy your abstinent food first. And I thought, what kind of heresy is that? You know, I'm like such a wonderful mother. Like, I need to take care of my kids. And she said, because if you take care of yourself, you'll be able to take care, better care of your kids. And then people taught me, get your dinner ready the night before. So when you get home, you're ready to eat. When I first got abstinent, the best I could do was get home with my kids, sit down and eat my dinner, and then make their dinner. Like, that was the best I could do. That's eventually, you know, slowly but surely, that has changed, where I can wait, I can pause. And, you know, I was at another meeting this morning where, you know, I was reminded, like, for me, recovery in general is learning to pause. It's putting my higher power in that pause between the stimulus and the response. My life used to be, you know, stimulus, react, stimulus, react, stimulus, react. And now it's stimulus, pause most of the time, and respond versus reacting. And I feel today that I have a life much more of thoughtful responses, imperfect, of course, and much less of knee-jerk reactions. And so, you know, it's hard to believe. Like, I still feel like a toddler emotionally in a lot of ways, but I've had such amazing recovery in this program. You know, I've worked through the steps with my sponsor in a different program. Strangely, all the times I worked the steps in OA, that other issue came up, as well as the food. And, you know, I've made my 9th step amends. You know, I continue to work steps 10, 11, and 12. And but, you know, one of the things I'm really grateful for, my mother passed away April 5th. And I had made amends, you know, verbal amends, and continued to make living amends to both my parents, and was able to love and accept and appreciate them just the way they were. And I just adored my mother, my father as well. He was harder to adore, but my mother, you know, we had such a nice relationship. my parents took care of me, and I was like emotionally an infant, I feel like, way too long into adulthood. I couldn't pay for things. My parents would pay for things for me. They would take me and my kids places because I couldn't pay for them. I couldn't get it together to make arrangements for things. And so so anyway, I was able to make living amends where I paid my parents back. It took me time. It was over time, money that they had lent me. I continued to put that money aside in my monthly spending plan so that I was able to save up and do things for them and take them places and, you know, feel like an adult. And that just, you know, you can't beat that. You know, no drug or piece of food is going to give me that same feeling of being connected with my higher power and feeling like I'm doing the next right thing. My mom had dementia, which really accelerated over the last couple of years. And so it was hard to have a relationship with her, but I still would go and visit her, show up for her as imperfectly as I could. You know, she lived on the West Coast, and my sister managed most of her care. And, I'm just so grateful for that today. The same thing with my father before he died. It was painful when my mother died, and to just, I was not expecting this kind of grief. And it comes in waves. People suggested it comes in waves, and it seems like that's the case. And after the first, she had had a massive stroke 2 weeks before she died, and I showed up for her. Like, I pictured myself being at her bedside, attentive, 24/7, and I couldn't do that. You know, I was staying with my sister out in Tacoma, and, we would go for a few hours, and I'd have to go home and rest and have my meals or bring my meals with me. Like, I really needed to put myself in intensive care and take care of all of that. And I learned to do that here. You know, I learned to do that when my father passed away, my daughter ran away when she was 16 or 17 now. We had no idea where she was for 6 weeks. You know, she came back pregnant when she called me. There are just all these things, not any worse than happens to anybody else. It's just this life on life's term kind of stuff. And they're just, for 22 years, 24 years, however many it is, there just has not been a reason to eat outside my food plan. There are things that have come up that I've needed to call my sponsor about. I'm 3 years post breast cancer treatment, and sometimes right after I had chemo, I was on the phone with my sponsor 2 or 3 times a day. Just we were trying to figure out what I could eat because I was, so nauseous and just felt so sick. You know, I've had 2 knee replacements, and the same thing. You know, the narcotics just make me really nauseous, and I had to change my food plan around for that. And it's just doable. You know, it's portable, it's flexible, it's doable. My husband and I have traveled abstinently. It's just really a miracle because for me, if the food is in its place, then I am open to this amazing life that I have. I've had a really good life for a long time, and now I'm more and more aware of it. So I find that meditation is really one of the cornerstones to my recovery. It's that conscious contact with the God of my understanding that helps me have a shot at what is the next right thing during the day. I'm much better at pausing when agitated or doubtful. And I can be of service to other people. And in another program that I'm in, one of the things that they'll say is, give from your overflow and not from your core. And so I'm getting better at doing that. I have a friend who says, her favorite sentence is, love to can't, and I just feel, I don't know, I feel like I'm becoming the person I was meant to be, and maybe I already was, but just covered it up with a lot of stuff, and I feel better about myself. So anyway, just glad to be here, and look forward to hearing from everybody else.
Thanks, Laura.